Hello and welcome to Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now, talking all things golf in Wisconsin, here's Gary and Rob. Talking.Golf is sponsored by Old Fashioned Golf. Our friends at Old Fashioned Golf are creating Wisconsin-inspired golf apparel right in Green Bay, Wisconsin. All of their gear is extremely comfortable, with one-of-a-kind designs that allow you to show your love for this great state both on and off the golf course. And is there anything better than old-fashioned golf at Christmas time? No siree. In fact, a box arrived at the Hernandez house from old-fashioned golf just the other day. Is it for me? Is it for my daughter? We'll find out soon. Christmas just around the corner. And if you're shopping for a golfer in your family, they've got it all at old-fashioned golf. Check them out at oldfashionedgolf.com, because at Old Fashioned Golf, it's all about Wisconsin, and you can find everything you need for your golfer on your Christmas list at oldfashionedgolf.com. With Gary D'Amato, Rob Hernandez here, and yes, indeed, Gary, we found there was a box, Old Fashioned Golf. I kind of thought it was going to be for me, but I'm kind of thinking that I didn't really make public the fact that I've got a couple of things on the wish list, including that fancy new I-43 hooded sweatshirt or the crew neck that they just added to their ensemble. But someone's going to be rewarded with something from old-fashioned golf.
Well, if it's addressed to you, Rob, I think it's yours. I think you can claim it. It's got your name on it.
I should just open the box. Yeah. I really should have.
Yeah. So, yeah.
You know, what, you know, how mad can my wife get if it was something that she had to get for someone? Yeah. Yeah. You know, I'm sure our daughter's coming to town this weekend from Minnesota. We're kind of doing the early Christmas thing, so I kind of feel it's going to be her. After our conversation last week about the stuff she was, you know, texting me about. So maybe she sent that same text to my wife, and maybe that was in the box, but we'll keep that in the download. Well, I'm not sure if my daughter will listen to this.
If that's the case, it's not going to fit you anyway, Rob. So what the heck, right?
A good point, Gary. A very good point. She never buys in my size. Dang it all. You're right.
Yeah.
You're right. I tell you what, it is the holiday season. Once upon a time, we called this part of the golf season the silly season, but, I don't think it's really silly anymore, because if you watch any of the World Champions Cup, basically the Ryder Cup meeting the International President's Cup for senior golfers, it was a interesting format. Loved the format, and it was a triumphant outcome for both Team USA and our Wisconsin participants in it, in Jerry Kelly and Steve Stricker. Gary, let's start out first. What did you think of the format of the World Champions Cup when you had all three teams that we think about in international team competition on one venue playing in sixsomes, which is kind of a, you know, normally we could chase up the course if we get more than four.
Right. Yeah, you know, once I caught on to the scoring, which took a little bit, I mean, it's a little bit of a complicated scoring formula, but once you catch on to it, I thought it was fun. And, you know, basically the premise is if you're playing in threesomes with singles or in sixsomes with three teams, basically you have to make a birdie and hope no other team makes a birdie, and then you get the most points. I mean, in that way, it was pretty easy to follow. But pretty cool that one-third of the U.S. team was from Madison, Wisconsin, and that both of those guys played huge roles in the outcome.
Well, and honestly, I didn't realize until I read your story that Jerry Kelly scored the most points of anyone from Team USA.
Yeah. Which really doesn't surprise you, knowing Jerry. You know, he loves team competitions, you know, being an ex-hockey player. And he always wanted to play in Ryder Cups. And I believe he made that 2001 Ryder Cup team, but it got canceled, of course, by 9/11. And then they had it in 2002. And at that point, he fell, I think, to like 13th or 14th or 15th in the points and didn't get selected, wasn't a captain's pick. I always think, Rob, he would have been a great Ryder Cup player in his prime, because he's so passionate about team and he's so patriotic. I thought Jerry would have been just a great addition to a Ryder Cup team at some point.
And I think the format fit him and just the concept fit him. I mean, he's always been a guy ever since he graduated from the PGA Tour to the Champions Tour when he turned 50. I don't want to say he's played with a chip on his shoulder, but certainly, you know, from day one, he's been out there to show that he can compete on this tour, and he's proven it beyond any kind of a doubt. That he can, and he showed it again this weekend. The blood gets boiling, and the competitive juices start flowing, and Jerry Kelly takes grinding to a whole nother level.
Yeah, no question, Rob. There's no question. I think he still plays. I think he's always played with a chip on his shoulder. You know, he He didn't have a great amateur career. Certainly, he didn't win a lot of stuff as an amateur, and he didn't go to a big time, you know, college for golf. He didn't, although that program, you know, had three guys who went on the PGA Tour in that Hartford program. But I think he's always had a little chip on his shoulder, and I think that's what's propelled him to some of the heights that he's reached. And certainly in a team format and playing with other guys, you just could see how much he was. They were pulling for him, and he was pulling for them on that U.S. team.
You know, when I saw him a month ago, Gary, he was ready for the season to be done, but he said specifically, in my mind, the season ends at the Schwab Cup Championship. The World Championship Cup begins next year. And sure enough, I mean, and I saw that his wife was down there, Carol, and then his mom, Lee. You know, Florida things are somewhat of a home match for him because he's got family down there. And it sure felt like he fed off of everything that was going on, including having family nearby. And, you know, Lee got, you know, the much deserved, you know, attention on social media. And, yep. You know, all the things kind of lined up for him this weekend.
Yeah, for him and Steve. I mean, Steve had a great week too. He didn't score quite as many points as Jerry, but he was big in a couple of those big matches. Came away with 10 and 11 points. And, I think those two combined for, 61 plus 58 and a half. What is that? 100 and almost 120 points those two guys combined for. They were really, I mean, everyone played good on the U.S. team, but they were really stalwarts in this competition.
And it came right down to the end, 221 to 219 over Team International. Team Europe just a little bit further back at 208. And like you said, Stricker with 56.5 points. You know, I mean, to me, it the whole thing, the whole concept, showcasing the best, you know, because I mean, the Europe has had a good run with Bernhard Langer. You know, the international team, especially with, you know, the emergence of Steven Elker in the last couple of years, you know, has been very mm-hmm. strong. And then, of course, Team USA with what Steve Stricker did this year and with what Jerry Kelly has done quietly, you know, in Steve's, you know, alongside Steve, they both rank in the top 10 or 15 in career victories on that tour. I mean, it really played to the strengths of the senior tour. And I think it kind of set the stage for when Tiger arrives.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, you know, and let's not confuse this with a Ryder Cup or a President's Cup. It's not that. Like Steve said, you know, we've had those moments in our career. We're on the Champions Tour now, and this is icing on the cake. And I think, you know, these guys, even when they're 56 and 58 years old, they still want to win. And you put these guys in this kind of format, and they want to win badly. So while it might not have been the pressure cooker or instill the sort of patriotic fervor of a Ryder Cup, these guys are very proud and they don't like to lose. They love to win. And, so it was in that way, I thought it was a really fun event.
So, where do you see it going from here? Is there anything you would improve on this, Gary?
You know, I think a couple of the guys, I read the quotes by some of the players, who played in it, and they were all very enthusiastic about this continuing and growing. I think, you know, the first year people are curious and I think this event probably won a lot of people over who tuned in and watched. And I think it's got a good future. And like you said, you know, if Tiger would play in it someday, I mean, my goodness, and some of the other great players who are going to be turning 50 in the next couple of years, maybe we'll see Mark Wilson on one of these teams someday, Rob.
Absolutely. Were you a fan of the Saturday Pro-Am interrupting the twosome type competition with the singles matches?
Yeah, you know, I wouldn't say I'm a fan of that, but I understand why they did it. I mean, especially like these guys were joking after 2 days of that, of four matches in 2 days, they need a little break because they're not young kids anymore. They probably needed a break just to relax a little bit and get their bodies back together. I wish, you know, in a perfect world, you'd play the competition straight through, but you also need I'm sure this event in its early years is going to need an infusion of capital, and, you know, the Pro-Am helps provide that.
I was not sure if it would work. You know, we're at a time in the NFL season where, you know, some weekends are bigger than others. Now, you know, in Wisconsin, at least, you know, with the Monday night game, as we record this on a Monday, you know, it avoided that, you know, distraction. I thought Steve and Jerry both got a lot of love on social media for what they did. But at the same time, you run the risk. But of course, that's part of, you know, this time of year. I mean, that's why they've kind of thinned out the number of golf events that are on the calendar, is to avoid going head to head with the NFL, the NBA, and now college basketball. I think we've pretty much avoided the bowl season, but, so I think they got that part licked. I understand the 9-hole components to it all. At the same time, you know, it's different than the Ryder Cup, President's Cup. It's not supposed to be that. And it is supposed to take into account these guys are at an age where if you were to try to play 36 holes in one day, 2 days in a row, and then come back, you know, either with a day's rest or without, with singles matches, I mean, you wouldn't get as good a product on Sunday or in those singles matches as you would when they were, you know, in their 30s or 40s even.
No, for sure. And, you know, the format was interesting because it's really not match play. It's really stroke play, but it's kind of stroke play within sort of a match play deal because, you know, in every threesome, hopefully, you know, there's going to be hopefully a team that wins the most points.
Right.
Versus the other two teams that have fewer points. So in that way, it's a little bit of a match play type situation, but they're holding every putt. There's no concessions. And so the format I thought was interesting. I don't think, you're right. 18 holes, match play, I don't think wouldn't work with that many matches with guys in their 50s and in, you know, a couple of cases in their 60s.
So, for Jerry Kelly, it is truly now the off season until, the Mitsubishi Electric Championship at Hawaii Live. And I'm not even sure. I assume he's eligible for that. Not having won this year, I'm not sure how they're going to attack that. I don't know what the exemption categories are for that. So we'll have to stay tuned to see when that field is released. Sometimes it's a 2-year thing. For Steve Stricker, it's back, on the, kind of the, second season circuit with the PNC Championship. He and Izzy Stricker will tee it up, down at, or just outside Orlando this weekend. Again, another, interesting format. Two pro-am rounds, one on Thursday, one on Friday, and then the competition in a, I guess, what is it? A scramble, basically, for both the parent and the child, and over 36 holes. This has been a really good format, and it's gotten a lot of interest since Tiger and Charlie Woods have gotten behind it here the last 5 or 6 years. Let's start first with Steve and Izzy playing. After what Steve was able to do last weekend, I'm sure he's got the competitive juices again going. And I know that they tweeted out a video of Izzy working at the range. They're not taking this lightly, are they?
No, I wouldn't think so, Robin. You know, there's a purse involved in this. So how does the purse get divided? Like, should Steve and Izzy win it? Does Steve keep all the money? Obviously, Izzy can't take any.
That's true. I'm sure. And I don't know if there's charity involved. That's a good point. Or if it goes into a trust for college.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is a unique situation. I mean, none of this is needed money, but all of it is, I think, the experience trumps anything that they're going to make on the golf course. But no, for sure. I mean, and for Steve and Izzy, I mean, there was a time when, you know, we didn't think Steve was going to get a chance to play because he didn't have that major championship on his record. But the people at PNC saw through that. I think, Gary, and maybe we'll find out more this week as they talk to Steve and Izzy about, you know, what's coming up. But I'd have to think that, the visibility of Izzy on the bag at the Senior PGA Championship this spring really, you know, kind of emphasized how good, what a good family story this is. And that's kind of what the PNC Championship is all about. I mean, it's about different kinds of family combinations. You've got, you know, Justin Thomas and his dad. You've got, Nelly Korda and her dad. And you've got, Steve and his daughter. And you've got a lot of father PGA Tour players with their sons. That's kind of how it started. And, you've seen a lot of PGA Tour players that have rotated through, members of their family, in terms of their offspring that, it's not been the same son or the same daughter, you know, all the time. So I really think the Stricker storyline fits the mold. And again, I mean, they both have had very successful years, and Izzy having won a second state championship and now heading off to Wisconsin next fall. I mean, this comes at a great time in both of their careers, and I would expect them to kind of, you know, leverage that for a good showing down at Orlando.
I would think so too, Robin. And I really believe that one of the reasons Steve has stayed so sharp, and especially these last few years as his daughters have, you know, really taken to the game and become good players themselves, I think he loves to show them how good he is. Not how good he was, but how good he still is. And I think that's one of the motivators that has kept him so sharp. And so this is going to be fun because Steve is playing great golf. And Izzy has really had a, like you said, a wonderful year. So I can't wait to see what they do in this format.
And I think they feed off of one another. I mean, Izzy drives it, I think, sneaky long for, you know, her size. You wouldn't be getting Division I offers if you couldn't. And then of course, I think the family genes in terms of short game, especially on the green, has really been passed down. Plus she noted to me, when I texted her about it a couple weeks ago, you know, she will get to play a forward set of tees. So it's not like you're trying to, you know, trying to swing out of your shoes from the same tees as the parent. There is, it's all calculated based on handicaps and ability level to make for a good, fair competition between the teams. So I think that's pretty cool. So we'll see. Let me quick run through the other, father, son, father, daughter combos. Steve and Izzy Stricker, Justin and Luke Leonard, Nick and Matthew Faldo, Nelly and Peter Korda, Stuart and Reagan Sink, Tiger and Charlie Woods, Justin and Mike Thomas, Lee and Daniel Trevino, Annika Sorenstam and Will McGee, Vijay and Cass Singh, Nick and Greg Price, Mark and Sean O'Mara, Tom and Sean Lehman, Bernhard Langer and Jason Langer, Matt and Cameron Kuchar, Padraig and Sierra Harrington, Retief and Leo Goosen, Jim and Tanner Furyk, David and Brady Duval, and John Daly and John Daly too. Is there anyone in there, Gary, that reminds or that stands out as being maybe a team that could be the biggest challenge to the Strickers if we are going to anoint Steve and Izzy as the favorites?
Well, depending what kind of shape Big John, the elder John Daly is in, you know, I think they've won it maybe 2 years ago, and I think they finished second last year. So, you know, John Daly, who, little John, as he used to be called, is a good college player. And of course, his dad is world class when he's healthy. So, those guys, I think, would be really tough. But no matter, I mean, you can talk about the rest of the field all we want, but I think everybody can't wait to see what Tiger and Charlie do. Maybe Tiger more so than Charlie. We know Charlie's a good little player, but everyone's going to be excited to see Tiger swing a golf club again.
Yeah, and I think, you know, based on what we saw of him at the Hero World Challenge, where he was making a lot of birdies, you know, I think while he's obviously not in, will never be at 100%, I like what, you know, basically what 7 months off did for, you know, his physical stamina. He seemed to get better every day. That's a positive sign. And I think two more rounds here riding in the cart will be helpful. Might also be a foreshadowing of the senior tour life to come in a few years. But for sure, I think it'd be a great way for him to wrap up 2023 on a high note. I'd have to think, you know, Justin and Mike Thomas have always been formidable. You know, I think Padraig Harrington has got a different son playing with him this year. I don't know much about Sierra and if I'm pronouncing that right. And I think Matt and Cameron Kuchar, I think Matt Kuchar's had a fairly solid fall season. He continued to play after the FedEx Cup season was done and played pretty well in stretches. And I think he could, you know, be a factor, but, you know, it's a scramble format. We all know how fickle that can be. And it's, you know, sometimes a matter of making sure somebody's getting hot with the putter, because ultimately you got to, you know, no matter where you are on the green, you got to knock in a few birdie putts and maybe even get an eagle to drop there as well. So that'll be fun. But, you know, I mean, this is such a wonderful concept. And I love that, you know, it being at Christmas time, it really kind of gets, you know, families together. And we've heard that, Nikki will be on the bag again as she was at the World Champions Cup for Steve. And, Bobby will be, on the bag, for Izzy. Although our source on that did say that depending on how everybody gets along, that could change. So we'll see.
Well, you know, this is an event, Rob, where frankly, a few years ago, I didn't really care much about. I can't remember watching it, you know, for long stretches for several years in a row. I don't think I tuned in, but I've really gotten behind this event now, especially with, you know, when we have one of our own, Steve and Izzy, playing in it. But you know, the Charlie and Tiger aspect of it, and some of the other teams you mentioned. I'm really looking forward to this, and I wouldn't have said that a few years ago. I think it's gotten some positive steam going here, some momentum, and I think the audience is going to be pretty good for this.
And I'm sure it's going to be fun for Izzy Stricker to be in the same field as Anelly Korda. And I'd like to see, you know, I know this, and Annika Sorenstam for that matter. And it's kind of nice that we've got, you know, that presence in there. And, you know, coming off of the Grant Thornton Invitational this weekend that Rose Zhang and Jason Day, I believe, won. You know, we're having some fun formats here that are really promoting the game, and at a time when we need a little bit of promotion after some of the controversies, and one of them I'll ask you about in a minute. But I think this is another format, you know, and team competition is fun at this time of year. And maybe, Gary, do we see more of this during the year? Would you like to see some of these concepts expanded, you know, whether it's on the LPGA Tour, the PGA Tour, a combination of the two, you know, for the people who are, you know, the men and women that are trying to get, you know, status preserved for the following year? Can we do that through a team concept? We've already have done it once with the event in New Orleans, but I'm not sure that really kind of captured the hearts of everybody. Do we have to take it to a different level?
You know, I think, you know, and we'll talk about this in a minute, there's going to be, you know, the tour is being shaken to its core right now, the PGA Tour. And, you know, I think they've got to look at their entire business model from top to bottom, Rob. And maybe the answer is to incorporate more of this type of event. I mean, you can't do this every week, but to have another one of the events similar to this, to maybe have an all-star week in the middle of the year where you bring the best players together in a driving, chipping, putting competition of some sort. I think the tour has to do some things, has to make some changes, because the old model with the LIV coming in now, the old model just isn't going to work. And we're going to see where the tour goes. I mean, supposedly there's this December 31st deadline for the framework agreement. That's only, you know, 20 days away. I don't know, Rob. I don't know what the answers are, but I think the tour's got to try some things, and this certainly would be something that they could try.
Well, let's talk about the elephant in the room, but let's do that after we tell you that Talking.Golf is sponsored by Old Fashioned Golf. Our friends at Old Fashioned Golf are creating Wisconsin-inspired golf apparel, and they're doing it in Green Bay, Wisconsin. All their gear is extremely comfortable with one-of-a-kind designs that allow you to show your love for this great state, both on and off the golf course. All their designs showcase something unique to the state of Wisconsin, whether it's the I-43 design or whether it is the state of Wisconsin logo, whether it is the Great Lakes logo, whether it's the parts of the Wisconsin license plate. It's all there in different forms on hats, on shirts, and now not only on pullovers, but on the hooded sweatshirts that you can get just in time for Christmas. You can see their entire selection at oldfashionedgolf.com. John Rahm is the elephant in the room. He jumped to LIV this week. I think it was rumored a lot of things that he'd been doing in recent months made people wonder what is his future. Quite frankly, Gary, I was surprised on the one hand, but then when you see the dollar signs being thrown around, not surprised. I also think that given his situation and doing this at a time when we don't know what the relationship between LIV and the PGA Tour will be, maybe he knows something we don't. And maybe his advisors know something that we don't. What do you make of his jumping to LIV in the context of all of, you know, that we've heard about potentially LIV and PGA Tour golfers being quote unquote on the same team?
Yeah, it's without doubt a big blow to the PGA Tour, Rob. I mean, here's a guy who was steadfastly behind, pledged his fealty to the tour, behind the tour 100%. And I guess it just goes to show that everybody has a price at some point, and if they're throwing $300 million at him or more, I mean, that's a lot of money. That's generational wealth. I mean, his grandkids aren't going to have to worry about money, so you can't blame him for taking the money, especially when there's so much doubt about what's going to happen. I mean, nobody still knows where we're headed with all this big mess. But, you know, we used to laugh when LIV first started poaching players. A lot of people said they've got, you know, B-rate players, guys over the hill, and guys who have injuries, and, you know, they don't have the best players in the world. Well, now they've got three of the last five major champions. And now I think we have to start paying attention to this whole LIV concept. And I know the PGA Tour has to be very, very worried about what's going on. You know, LIV has a schedule for 2024. They're talking about a schedule for 2025. They're going ahead as if they're going to be here unchanged. So what does that mean for the PGA Tour within this framework agreement? It's just a lot of questions, Rob. I don't know. Do you have any answers?
I don't. We still don't really, do we really know what is, you know, what the tally is? I mean, it's a $302 million deal. One report says, I've seen and heard it say that it could be higher. At some point, doesn't the spigot run out? And then, you know, how many golfers do they currently have under their umbrella that were brought in at a quote unquote lower rate? I mean, you know, it's the same situation that the PGA Tour has dealt with for this last year, trying to, I think, incentivize the current players on the PGA Tour stable to stay by upping not just the purses, but, you know, the competition for those purses with these designated events now, I guess we're calling them, and the amount of money they're playing for is greater. At what point is too much, you know, or will LIV run out of money? And who do they go after next? How do they make sure the current players are, you know, taken care of? What happens if, you know, again, these guys are getting older, and what happens if there's a loss of product in what they're selling, and how will that impact who's on their payroll? And then how does that, you know, how does that split occur between, say, a Phil Mickelson or a Bryson DeChambeau and LIV if all of a sudden they become irrelevant for that tour? Certainly the PGA Tour is not going to welcome them back. I just feel like we're in a state where it's really tough to predict the future and how this is going to play out.
Oh, it is. It's impossible to predict the future at this point. Even the power brokers, even the, you know, higher ups in the tour hierarchy and the LIV people, I don't think they know how this is all going to shake out at this point. But, you know, LIV has some, I mean, you've got to hand it to them now. They've got some good players, and Rahm is going to have his own team. He's going to be captain of his own team. And there's rumors that Tony Finau, who's a good friend of John Rahm's, is now going to be the next player to jump. I mean, if they lose Finau, I mean, it's down to Rory and JT and Ricky Fowler and a couple other guys, you know. And now the tour is, you know, asking sponsors to kick in more money for these signature events and these elevated events, and the sponsors are starting to balk. You know, Wells Fargo now has, after 2025, is pulling out as a tournament sponsor. I mean, there's only so much blood you can squeeze out of a turnip, right? So,
yeah.
I just don't know where this is all headed, Rob. But right now, it doesn't look good for golf. It doesn't look good for the golf fan, in my eyes.
Does this, you know, neither of us are really around in the days of the early days of the PGA Tour when the name players became very popular, did a lot of, you know, exhibition events, you know, around the country, many in the state of Wisconsin. I mean, we're talking apples and oranges when it comes to money. You know, back then it was, they were simply trying to supplement what was basically a non-existent salary structure and very little money. And now you're trying to supplement, you know, the rich do get richer. It's like what Giannis said about the in-season tournament when when he was told the winning team, you know, gets $500,000 a player. He doesn't need it. The guy at the end of the bench might. But, you know, at some point, you know, when is enough? And then I'm also, you know, you're running the risk, I feel, Gary, of losing the average golf fan, because we don't know what this is all about. We don't know why a guy like John Rahm, who I thought had a little bit higher character than to jump, you know, at money, especially given the money he's made. You know, we talked about generational wealth. Yeah. But I mean, his 2023 taxes will show a generational wealth that would feed my generation and the generation after and the generation after that quite handsomely. So I don't get that. And now on the heels of the Rahm announcement, we hear that the PGA Tour Policy Board has selected an outside investment group to negotiate with as talks with the PIF continue. And it's this strategic sports group, which coincidentally includes Brewers owner Mark Antanasio, as well as a couple other prominent sports owners, Mark Lazary from the Bucks, Tom Ricketts, who's you know, big in, I believe, Chicago, you know, sports fame. I'm not sure. Is he the Cubs? And, but, you know, I, you know, what are we bringing this group in for? What's the purpose? And ultimately, what's the end goal here? And I tell you what, if I'm a guy like Thomas Longbella going into the final stage of PGA Tour qualifying school, you know, I'm playing for a job that I don't know what it's going to look like maybe even this year. I think this year we've got pretty well somewhat figured out, but, you know, certainly beyond, I mean, things could change for the better. Things could change for the worse. What are we going for here?
Yeah, I actually thought of Thomas the other day, and, you know, I'm sure he's just trying to put his nose to the grindstone and trying to get through the qualifying school and trying to ignore the noise around him, which is what he should be doing. But what about the rank and file players? I mean, there's a lot of them are up in arms because, you know, I heard one of the guys talking about how if he wins a regular tour event, he gets fewer FedEx points than someone who finishes like fifth in one of the elevated events. And that doesn't seem right because the regular event, though they won't have the superstars, will have 156 player fields as opposed to, you know, 70 player no cut fields. And, it's the rich definitely aren't going to get richer. You can see that. I guess it's like any other sport, Rob, you know, in the NBA, the NFL and Major League Baseball, look at what Shohei Ohtani just signed for, you know,
yeah.
The better, the superstars are the ones that carry the sports on their backs and probably feel like they are entitled to be paid like it and probably should be. But the whole model of the PGA Tour is going to change for sure.
Well, it sure is somewhat disconcerting if you are, you know, a longtime golf fan who remembers the days of Jack, Arnie, Gary Player, Tom Watson, name your superstar, Lee Trevino, Gary Player. They all, to me, it was about more than just the money. Yes, they were compensated handsomely for the work they did in their era. But compared to the money we're talking today, the fact that Jack Nicklaus, you know, will be making, you know, a pittance of what a Jon Rahm will be making, or even insert your name of a LIV golfer who's making gobs of money. Insert your name of a PGA Tour player who's going to finish in the top 10 in the current structure and walk off with millions, not only in purse money, but also the incentive money through the FedEx Cup. It really just, again, you would think that there's a market out there for people that want to see good golf played by anybody, but you're right. I mean, LIV wouldn't be going off after Jon Rahm in this current situation if they didn't see a benefit to have his name added to the marquee of the names they already have. So I guess please stay tuned. On the other side, we also had PGA Tour Champions Qualifying School, which truly is, you know, I mean, these are guys that are post 50. Some are just getting set to turn 50. I really hope the trickle down doesn't come to the PGA Tour champions, because I think we've kind of, especially as it relates to the guys from Wisconsin and the tournaments that we've had come through Wisconsin, we've hit a good rhythm. But let's assume that for now, Gary, that they won't touch the PGA Tour champions. Mario Tiziani tried to improve his status for 2024. It's pretty good right now. Didn't quite get in the top five, finished top 20. And then Mick Smith, the teaching pro out of Summit, had a great first round of PGA Tour Champions Qualifying School, the 67, but then injured his wrist, I believe it was, in round two. Yep. And it became painful, not only physically, but on the scorecard, just couldn't get, you know, his game back to where it was the previous day with the injury, and had to withdraw after seven holes. Let's start with Mick. I really felt bad for him because, you know, this is a guy that we've seen an immense talent join us in the state of Wisconsin, an Australian that has, you know, filled a wonderful role in the among our rank and file PGA members in the state of Wisconsin that are excellent at both the regular level and the senior level. And here it was, you know, after one round, I thought, hey, look out for Mick Smith.
Yeah, he, you know, he said his game was in a great place, and it obviously was. He shot 67 in the first round. I think he was in 10th place in the field, opened with a par in the second round, and then hurt his wrist hitting a shot out of the desert, he told me, on the second hole. So apparently he hit a wayward tee shot maybe and had to hit a shot out of a bad line in scrub or somewhere and hurt his wrist and couldn't hold onto the club, and felt really bad for him because you know, here's a guy who was in great shape. His game is in great shape. He's got a chance to achieve a lifelong dream and play on a Champions Tour. And now he's got to wait another year, but he told me he definitely will try again next year, Rob. So let's get that wrist healed up I'm sure he's going to be a force to contend with in the section this next year, and let's see what he does next year at Q School.
Absolutely. And as far as Mario Tiziani goes, started slow with a 72, came back with a 65 in the second round, and was lurking throughout. Just couldn't get enough putts to fall early in the final round when I was watching him, but did come back with three in a row late to get into the top 15. And on the verge of the top 10, but five and a straight five, not even five in ties, advanced to get their full status for next year. Well, that's what he was trying to do. His status inside the top 52, I believe it is, but above the above 36, I think he's 42nd or something like that, based on where he finished on the money list. You know, that got last year's guy in the same spot some starts early. And he won an event and improved his status. You know, I think Mario's just looking to get starts without having to go through Monday qualifiers or having to write for sponsors exemptions. But I thought Mario showed throughout the year. And again, you know, this week he's got game, and he certainly is in a position to, you know, make it and stay out there for a long time. I think Mario's looking to win, but, you know, he knows that he's got to shore up things probably from 100 yards and in.
Yeah, I agree with that, Rob. And, you know, I think he made that 20 starts last year on the Champions Tour. I would expect him to get somewhere around that many, that number again this next year. That's counting the playoffs that I think he played in. Did he play in two playoff events and didn't qualify for the first?
Yep.
Yeah. So I would expect him to, you know, play 18 to 20 events again this next year. And, I see continued improvement for Mario. Like he said, you know, he went a decade plus without playing hardly any competitive golf. And, you know, you just can't jump out there and play with the best over 50 players in the world and expect to beat them when you haven't played hardly any tournament golf for a decade. So I think he's probably learned a lot about himself and his game this last year and a half, 2 years. And I expect him to be even better this next year.
Yeah. A number of top 20 finishes, snuck in two top fives, one late at the SAS Championship, which, you know, got him into a point where he could play two playoff events, then finish T62 at the Dominion Energy and then T47 at the TimberTech. And I think, like Jerry Kelly, might have seen some fatigue in Mario down the stretch.
Sure.
But yet at the same time, he wanted to get more starts, which is why he played the Q School, and trying to just, you know, after all that time not playing competitive golf, you know, I think he still wants to play catch up. But, you know, he did play almost twice as many events, had two top 10s versus one a year ago, eight top 25s versus five a year ago. More importantly, $473,000 in earnings after 245 and change a year ago. And the stats were largely the same, especially greens and regulations, pretty similar. Kind of dropped off a little bit in driving accuracy, but you always take that stat with a grain of salt, because, you know, a lot of these guys, you know, hit fairways, but sometimes those balls don't often stay there, and with the conditions they play in. So you're technically counting, you know, first cut shots as fairways missed. I thought the stat that really didn't improve, he went from 30 putts per round, 30.09 a year ago, to 30.48. That's not going in the direction he wants, Gary, and we've talked about it before. You know, putting is something that, you know, I think has always been a bit of a bugaboo for him. I noticed, again, you know, here, like we saw, I think throughout the season, you know, he's gone to that aim point putting, and, you know, he started to make some late in the round, but it just, didn't really make anything early in the round when he needed it to kind of harness that momentum.
Yeah. I think he would tell you that, you know, putting has held him back a little bit over the course of his career. You know, he had one full year, I believe, on the PGA Tour. He played in at least one U.S. Open that I can remember. And putting's always been a little bit of, I wouldn't say he's a weak putter by any stretch of the imagination, but I mean, he's not in his brother-in-law's class. And if he could putt like Steve, you know, he'd be winning on the Champions Tour. I don't think there's any question about that, because he's a really good ball striker. And he's definitely among the top, probably, I don't know, where did he rank in driving distance, Rob? Do you have that in front of you?
I don't have it in front of me, but it was pretty solid.
Yeah, I would guess he'd be in the top third on the Champions Tour in driving distance. So he's got all the, every part of the game. If he can lower his putting statistics by a quarter to a third of a stroke per round, I mean, he's going from tie for 40th to tie for 18th and from tie for 23rd to tie for 4th. So, that's all it takes. So I'm sure he'll be working on his putting this winter.
He played with a guy in the final round named Eric Axley, who looked to me, Gary, like a bigger, stronger left-handed version of Alex Chayka. You know, big arms, and Mario was, you know, and all three of those guys. And the other guy that he played with in that group was David Branson, who I believe got the final spot in a playoff. One of the four Australians who made it through, and so he also hit the ball a long way, and Mario was right up there with him. So. But and Mario's strength, I think, was, you know, as the stats proved, were proven that, you know, greens in regulation means you've got a strong iron game. And I think he struggled with that, especially in the final round a little bit here at Q School. So we'll continue to follow Mario Tiziani as he gets set for the his third full season on the PGA Tour Champions. Gary, a few things to tidy up before we wrap up this segment of Talking.Golf. The Wisconsin.Golf class-by-class high school rankings, the active high schoolers, we've ranked them all now through the class of 2024. Izzy Stricker and Jessica Geiser share the number one spot among the girls who are graduating this year, and we wound up splitting the top honor in the boys as well. Mason Hopp had a great year. The West Appear High School senior shared that number one ranking with his good friend Aiden Cudney out of Kimberly. Really hard, Gary, to figure out where to put Tyson Sparks. He won the an event at Lake Arrowhead late in the year, finished second to Cudney at the WPGA Junior, took it low a number of times on a number of good courses, but didn't play high school golf because he's doing the virtual school thing at his family's winter home in Nevada, and then also didn't qualify for the State Am or the State Open, didn't try to qualify for the State Open, didn't fit in his schedule, and that's something that Aiden Cudney was exempt for both, and then Mason Hopp did get successfully qualify for both, which, as you know, is a really difficult, you know, double to pull off, especially at his age. I think the good news is, Gary, we're really nitpicking here, you know, because we've got three resumes that are as strong or stronger than any we've seen. And then you've got a couple guys behind him in Casey Nickel, who's still trying to figure out if there's a Division I offer out there for him this year or conceivably he could go the junior college route, play there for a year, and then see what opens up next year as we move 1 year further away from COVID. But we're seeing some very, very deep classes in the boys' ranks. And then I think I mentioned it last week, nobody's played more than the class of 2025 next year's seniors, at least in the summertime. So we're getting kids playing a lot of golf. We're getting kids playing a lot of good golf. You're seeing it in some of the state amateurs and state opens you've covered. But the Ray Fisher with, you know, Mason Schmidtke a couple of years ago winning it. It's a different era for young golf these days. And I think, that Tiger era has kind of trickled down. There is no fear in these kids.
No, there's not. And I think it's time to give you a shout out, Rob, for your coverage of junior golf because, someone compiled a list of the top junior golf blogs in the nation, the top, I think, 50 blogs and your coverage, they consider it a blog, I guess. But I guess overall, you'd say your coverage of junior golf came in at number 6 in the nation of all the publications and all the websites that cover junior golf, which is really a big honor for Wisconsin.Golf.
It sure is. And, you know, we're behind a number of sites that are, you know, largely there. The American Junior Golf Association being one, and the, future Legends Tour or Futures Tour, basically, for junior golfers was another. The Illinois Junior Golf Association, which does a nice job because they've got a regional component in there, and they're not part of the section. They're a separate entity, and they have their in-state stuff, so they get a lot of looks, too. But, you know, we were a couple spots ahead of Golf Week in their junior coverage, and it just says a lot about how passionate the junior golf families are in our state about what we're doing and about what it means to their kids as far as exposure. And you know, we'd love to, you know, love to keep doing it. And, you know, it's, the future of I like to say it's the guys that you'll be covering in a few years, Gary, because you're the guy that, you know, kind of focuses in on our amateur and professional golf. And, you know, we've always had a rich legacy of developing, these kids. And, I think we're developing not only the golfer on the course, but they're very interested in what their peers are doing and very supportive of what their peers are doing. And the thing that I found about the rankings, Gary, is that these classes that have these debates between who's number one, you know, everybody's okay with whatever we come up with because they know that whoever's around them in those rankings has made them better already. And they've gotten out of junior golf what they hope to get out. And I think that's pretty cool. But, yeah, we're really appreciative of the audience that we have for our junior coverage. And, we look forward to continuing that. We'll have, basically, Gary, the last, two classes will be the 2023 boys and girls as we look at their impact through one semester of college golf. And, with both the boys and the girls, we'll factor in their summer performance. And then with the boys, what they did their final year of high school golf. So, that, is still yet to come. Boy, I tell you what, it was a busy, sweet spot, week as well, Gary. In addition to kind of previewing what's ahead with the Strickers in the PNC championship, there were a couple of items in there that, really, you know, got our attention this week, with Kohler not, getting a favorable decision from a judge about the course they're trying to build, around the, Kohler Andrade State Park and then Andy North getting named to the USGA Executive Committee. Let's start first with the Kohler news. You know, they've been wanting to build this course for a long time. It's been tied up in the courts. You've got the golfers who want to see it get done because they know it'll be a great destination experience, but you've got the people, the environmentalists who do not want to see any inch of Kohler Andrade disruptive. Am I reading this right? That's kind of what it boils down to, and the judge this time sided with the people who don't want it disrupted.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. You know, there's some globally, I guess, globally, I don't know what the word is. I forget what the words were, but there's some wetlands in that area that they want to build a golf course on that environmental groups are really don't want to see touched. And Kohler was going to do some mitigation and you know, use those wetlands in the golf course and then turn some other areas in the wetlands, to mitigate what they were taking for the course. But that didn't sit well with the environmental groups. And, you know, this has been hung up in the courts now. Rob, I remember writing about this when I was at the Journal Sentinel back in 2013 and 14 when they were just starting to talk about trying to build this golf course. So it's been hung up for a decade now in the courts. This is another unfavorable ruling for Kohler. I'd imagine they're pretty frustrated at this point. I don't know what the recourse is, but I am hearing rumors that they're going to build another course next to Black Wolf Run, and that might be the direction that they take this now in the future. Is they need to build another course, I think, in their eyes to keep up with Sand Valley, with what's going on there. And so I think they're going to build another course. It's just probably not going to be where they really would like to.
Well, and you're right. And because I think the proposals that were submitted, you know, showed it was going to be another, you know, top-notch, you know, course. Not that the one next to the Black Wolf Run won't be, but, you know, they put a lot of sweat equity into trying to planning that out and trying to appease the people who were opposed to it. And they just couldn't come to an agreement. And ultimately, of course, decided that they should not disrupt that parcel of land. 247 acres, globally rare is the description you use for the wetlands, Gary. Yeah. And, you know, if it is globally rare, it tells me that you might not want to be messing with it. But you'd love to think that you could find, you know, adjacent property elsewhere, but I'm not really, you know, I've never really looked closely at, you know, where they could move things, but especially when you've kind of locked in a lot of your concepts based on the land you thought you were going to have, it might not be easy to pivot. So we'll continue to follow that. Andy North going on the USGA Executive Committee to me is a no-brainer. The guy has had the best interest of golf in mind for generations. He's a two-time US Open champion. He knows how valuable the USGA and its role is. I think it's an honor for Andy North to be able to serve, but I think it's also a benefit to the USGA to have a guy like that who's not only played at golf at a high level, but he's commentated on golf at a high level and has seen the game from so many different angles.
Yeah, he definitely adds a wealth of experience to that executive board. And as a USGA champion and a US Open champion, I mean, there aren't many of those kind of guys who get on that board of that executive committee. So, you know, I'll have to talk to Andy. I don't think he would have designs on becoming USGA president someday. Maybe he does. I don't know. But I think he probably just wants to serve on this committee and lend his voice to the direction, future direction of golf, especially in this, interesting time with the golf ball rollback that's coming up and everything. I think Andy's voice is going to be very respected in that committee.
Are you going to use the rollback ball, Gary?
No way, Rob. I'm saving all the balls I have. I'm going to use them forever. I don't care. I get those extra for you.
I agree. I've finally gotten to a point where the driver is an asset in my game. And a little bit of that is the driver. A little bit of that is the golf ball. I can't imagine trying to hit. I get frustrated when I hit a range ball and I look to see which flag it's going past. And it looks, you know, those are soft balls as it is. And I can't imagine having to use those, you know, off of an actual tee box and then watch them come to rest about a, you know, what are they saying? Like 50 to, you know, 60 yards less. And there's a certain point in the hole where that, you know, that rolled back golf ball may not be quite as big a deal as it is with the driver off the tee. This, again, we're losing the average golfer here, Gary, because we don't get it.
There's two sides to this argument and both are very passionate about it. I just don't understand, you know, coming out of COVID when we've gained a huge momentum in golf, tons of people returning to the course and or starting the game, and now you're going to tell them, oh, we're going to make the game a little harder now. Sorry, guys, but, you know, and even for a guy with my swing speed, I'm told it's only going to be 3 or 4 yards. But heck, Rob, I need those 4 yards. I mean, 4 yards is 12 feet. That puts me 12 feet closer to the hole, Rob.
Yeah, or they're going to see a big crowd at the forward tees because we don't lose any of that advantage. But that's a discussion for another day. Gary, I think we'll call it a quits on this edition of Talking Deck Golf. Appreciate the time, and we'll do it again next week.
Okay, Rob, thank you.
All right, for Gary D'Amato, this is Rob Hernandez. And, of course, Talking Deck Golf is sponsored by Old Fashioned Golf. Our friends at Old Fashioned Golf are creating Wisconsin-inspired golf apparel right in Green Bay, Wisconsin. All of their gear is extremely comfortable, with one-of-a-kind designs that allow you to show your love for this great state both on and off the course. And I tell you what, is there anything better than getting an old-fashioned golf item, whether it's a shirt, a pullover, a hooded sweatshirt? The new ones are in stock now and available. Or they're wonderful ball markers that are in the spirit of Wisconsin design. Maybe it's a cap. Gary D'Amato has not only a head cover for his driver, but he's got a putter cover for his putter. And it's all available at Old Fashioned Golf because it's all about Wisconsin at Old Fashioned Golf. So check him out at oldfashionedgolf.com. For Gary, I'm Rob. We'll talk golf again next week.